Welcome to the Iron Basketball Podcast, the Pick and Troll Podcast. I'm your host, Zach Harper. Matt Moore, let's go around that old NBA. How's it going?
Yeah. Let's do some NBA 360 action.
NBA 360. You know what we're going to talk about today? We're going to talk about the Golden State Warriors, who are good. The Houston Rockets, who are not.
Confirmed.
You know, maybe some Kobe Bryant?
Yeah.
Maybe some picks for tonight? Maybe our what we're looking forward to with Thanksgiving? We've got all kinds of things to talk, all kinds of topics.
Yeah, we're going to go around the league.
Around the league in 360 minutes? No, that's a very long podcast.
It's very long.
I don't have podcast. That kind of – I got to catch a flight at 5. That's not going to work.
That will not be possible. So you and I haven't podcasted in a while, and in that time, the Golden State Warriors have not lost.
They're still undefeated.
Like you left, and they had not lost, and then you came back, and they had not lost. I saw them in Denver when they tied the record for the start at 15-0, and I have to say – it was a surreal experience seeing this team and the kind of excitement that they have created across the league.
It's a real thing. Like it's an experience now.
I took like a huge amount of crap on Twitter for basically saying like I don't necessarily get like thrilled over how Steph plays. Like, there are still times when I'm just like, Jesus, that's amazing. Like you cannot be unimpressed with how the Warriors play or how Steph plays. But even if – no matter what like the subjective viewpoint of watching them is, it is undeniable. Like, being in the building is cool. Like, I will say that. Like, being in the building when the Warriors are in town is officially cool. It feels even bigger than the Heat did. And I thought nothing was going to compare with that Heat triad team. And this blows it away because, I mean, everyone universally loves them.
Yeah, I guess I'll get them – I'll get them in Utah when they're 19-0 or when they go for 19-0. So, cause I don't anticipate, I do feel a little bit, I don't know. I'm kind of in on the Suns team and I don't know why, cause I don't find them to be particularly interesting on the court yet, but for some reason I'm kind of buying in.
There's something about them. I agree. They got a vibe.
There is a vibe, right? Like, and I can't explain why I'm enjoying them. I can't explain why, like, I don't know if it's just, I still really like Tyson Chandler. Like, I don't know what it is, but I'm kind of like, oh, this is definitely a playoff team in the West. Like,
I think
I'm there right now.
I think part of it is, and I having watched the Suns and having Brandon Knight just gone supernova against the Nuggets' atrocious 3-point defense. He put up 38 in that game. He and Bled combined for 60, which they've now done 4 times this season, and that was like a week ago. They may have done it again since. That's kind of it, is that it feels like those two can get hot so quickly, and so many of their role players are just capable, and then Tyson is just a badass.
Yeah.
And so, like, that combination is very solid. It's just they have a real – they are a really dangerous team in that if you do not take them seriously, if you mess around with them, if you give them an opening, they're going to burst right through. That said, the Warriors will destroy them because the Warriors destroy everyone.
I mean, I do think there's a legitimate chance the Suns are the ones that pull off the upset.
I will say no. I will say no right now. You are I legitimately do not know when this team is going to lose again. And I say that not in terms of like, I don't know, it could be like a week, next week. I'm telling you, I do not know in the 2015-2016 season when they're going to lose again.
Well, I granted, it's very hard to forecast when they might lose because they're very good. I'd even say great. I'd venture to say that the Warriors are great. But I do think that could be a little bit of a trap game of some sort. I don't even know if trap is the right word, because I just think like eventually they have to have a letdown, it seems, and that could be it. But then maybe, I don't know, maybe Utah's defense can do it, but their defense is really about shutting down the middle, and the Warriors aren't particularly worried about the middle being shut down because they kind of trick you by drawing you in. But yeah, like, I mean, this does, I don't know. I mean, we were on a conference call yesterday for work, and there was like a comment at one point where, well, all right, if they're 34-0 around Christmas, I'm just like, all right, hold on. Like, this can't be a thing. We can't be talking about it.
Look, I asked Bogut. I told Andrew, 7-foot scary Australian Bogut. I said, are you guys ever going to lose again? And his response was, it'd be nice if we didn't. It'd be great to, you know, go 82-0 and then sweep all 3 playoff rounds and then sweep the finals. That'd be great. But he's like, let's be realistic. And I'm just like, I don't know. Because
right, they're going to play the Spurs. They're going to play the Thunder. They're going to play the Cavs. Like, these are all teams capable of... The Clippers are capable of beating them. If the Rockets ever had a soul again, like, they'd be capable of
no.
No, no, all right. The Rockets have no chance. But no, there are other teams that have chances of winning game.
I guess here's the thing. Everyone says, well, they've got a chance to. Okay, but you're still talking about the Warriors have a better chance than not of beating them. Even against San Antonio, they have a better chance of beating them. I'm fascinated to see that matchup.
Have you seen Manu Ginobili's numbers?
I know.
It doesn't make any sense.
I know. Because I'm getting excited. I was skeptical of it in preseason when Jesus Gomez of Pounding the Rock wrote an article that was basically like, the Warriors are built to kill small ball.
Yeah.
Duncan and Aldridge together are going to create absolute mayhem on small ball lineups, particularly the one that the Warriors roll out.
I don't know about that.
And I was skeptical. And I remain skeptical that they can beat them. But I am very much of the belief now, having thought a lot about this, because I've asked pretty much everyone, okay, how do you beat the death lineup or the nuclear lineup, or as Sam Amick is calling it, the Velociraptor lineup? How do you beat Curry, Thompson, Iguodala, Barnes, Draymond?
That's so sad for the actual Raptors.
Wow. They've never earned that. Yeah, you have to earn.
You've got to earn that Velosa prefix.
Exactly. How do you beat that? And everyone's basic response is, gosh, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, that's not an answer. Like, I actually want to know, how do you do this? Like, Adam Morris, who's a really smart guy who writes over at Nylon Calculus and Denver Stiffs, is like, gosh, I don't know. And I'm like, okay, you're just basically saying, like, the Warriors are awesome. I get that. But if you're going to construct an approach, what do you do? And there are two things I think that the team should do. You go big. I think you have to go big and stay big. And you have to say, I think you surrender trying to beat them defensively, because I don't think you can. If you go small, their small is still – you're like, well, I have to go small to guard them. You can't guard them small.
No, you can't.
So you have to force them to abandon it, because they have to look at it and just be like, we are getting crushed on the glass. Like, we are just getting annihilated. And if you look back, the Cavs did that for three games. Like, Blatt stuck with Thompson and Mozgov in heavy minutes, and it worked effectively. He went away from it, and they melted. When he started benching Mozgov, that's when they would get killed in those fourth quarters. You have to get past that point where you're like, I have to get this fly up off the floor. They're getting too many open threes. This is a disaster. We got to match up with them. You have to stay with it and be like, they're going to hit threes. We have to basically hit 80% of our twos, factoring in. Like, we have to get 2 points on almost every possession with offensive rebounding. We just have to, and that means your guy has to be bigger and stronger than Draymond, which is hard. But if you could do that, that to me is
but
the
it's only doable. Well, here's the thing about that, I was actually talking to some, I don't know, higher up in the NBA, and he brought up the point of like,
you
well,
mean like God?
What?
You mean like God?
Yeah, I was talking to God, NBA God. I was talking to Rasheed Wallace. No, I was talking to someone, and he brought up the point. He was like, all right, let's just say for you know, S's and G's, like, Memphis beats the Warriors in the playoffs last year because of like the way Randolph played, the way Gasol played. Like, they bullied them, and they, you know, they're up 2-1. They end up closing out that series in 6 or 7 games. Like, let's just say that happens. He's like, everyone would have gone to this, oh, well, now we got to be bullies again. Like, that would have been the thing for, you know, that would have been the new trend of like, oh no, you can kill small ball. Let's go big. So I do think there's some validity to that. You know, you like, it is hard to be bigger and stronger than, well, not bigger than Draymond, but it's hard to be stronger than Draymond, especially with his impact as a player. But you kind of just have to do it, right? Like, you kind of just have to try to impose your will in that way. You have to be able to keep up with 3-point shooting. Like, I don't think you can let them double your 3-point makes.
Right.
Because that's just math, right? But you got to get Draymond into foul trouble. You got to get other guys into foul trouble, and you have to live at the free throw line and slow the game down and muck it up. And I think that's how you do it. And I don't know that that's particularly easy to do, but that probably is the answer to all this small ball stuff. Is that it's not so much a math equation in the sense that it's like just a stylistic, like, you have to take away the flow of the game. That's always what teams talk about in these cliched response of like, well, we have to play our game, we have to set our tone, we have to dictate tempo, we have to do what we want to do. And it sounds cliche, but that's all correct, and that's how you take another team out of what they do. You know, it's part of what we saw with the We Believe Warriors and how the Mavericks screwed up, right? Is they played to the Warriors' strengths because they were scared of that small ball. They were scared of that type of stuff. And so they thought, well, all right, we have talented players, we can match that. No, you got to play your identity. And that's that really is probably the only way you can do that. Maybe the Spurs are set up with that because of Aldridge and Duncan. You know, I mean, I'm just not a big Aldridge guy, but somebody can, I do think someone can do that. Now, give me the Warriors in any 7-game series this year at this point. Sure. But I, you know, I think that theory that you're talking about, I think it's correct.
They're scoring the small ball lineup in 62 minutes. I do like, however, that that Luke Walton and the Warriors are only using it like very conservatively. They're basically like, oh, have they taken the lead or pulled within even? Okay, deploy the Doom lineup.
It was pretty f***ed up that they did that in the first quarter against the Lakers last night.
Yeah, that was not me. That was not nice. They're scoring 1.57 points per possession.
That's stupid.
Okay. So to do the math, you now have to score one. Like, let's say to give yourself some cushion, you got to score 1.8. So that's like the offense that you have to put up is you got to score 1.8 possessions on a lineup, by the way, that's only allowing 86.7 or 8.67 or 0.867 points.
Oh my
possession.
God.
So, I mean, that's like where the math has to get to. And
I mean, that's got to regress, though, right? Like, at least even down to, like, 1.15.
I don't know,
which is,
man,
still absurd.
You want to know one of the reasons that it's, like, it's impossible right now? Is Andre Iguodala is the guy that he thought he was in Philadelphia.
Yeah, he's playing out of his mind.
Like, he's shooting contested threes and knocking them down and acting like, of course I hit that. I'm Andre Iguodala. I won finals MVP. And it's like, you're a sixth man for a reason. You've never been able to shoot. What is happening?
There was an interesting comment I saw last night of like, basically someone was like, this is why Harrison Barnes is going to get a huge contract. And someone else kind of retorted with, I mean, he's hitting open shots. Like, is he going to hit open shots somewhere else? You know, is he going to get these same shots? There is the kind of the idea like, this is making all these guys system players.
Well, we saw this with the Lakers, right? We saw this for years with the Lakers. You and I used to joke about this all the time. That a guy would have a monster series with the Lakers.
And then he's gone.
And get parlayed that into a massive contract. And then all of a sudden you're like, what did we pay for? Like,
right.
This isn't what we paid for. And I mean, I think the same thing will probably happen. Because part of it is, look at the other guys. Look, Leandro Barbosa was out of the league.
Yeah.
Like, not an NBA guy anymore.
Had a big knee injury, right?
And now he's automatic from all over the field. And he's, like, beaten younger point guards in transition.
He dunked. 2015, he dunked.
You know, like, Festus Ezeli. Is he quantifiably... I think he's better. Is he quantifiably considerably better than Bismack Biyombo?
I think so.
Like...
Mostly because he has hands.
By, like, a significant margin...
I think so. I don't know. I'm really high on Festus Ezeli.
Like, would you run an offense through him?
Well, not run an offense through him. No,
they're able to because everyone has to stay home because of the shooters, and Ezeli's hitting the hook shots.
Well, they're running four plays for him. This isn't a stretch of like, all right,
know,
Festus,
but it's
take
just,
us home.
My only thing is that, like, I mean, James Michael McAdoo is
well, yeah, all right, that's where you, that is the line,
right? Like, that's the thing, is there are no bad players there. And people would say Jason Thompson. I'm like, I don't know. Give Jason Thompson 6 months there. Like,
yeah.
Like, would you be surprised if, like, versus Memphis, like, well, Jason Thompson really gave them a great effort in 15 points as the Warriors swept the Grizzlies? Like,
no, because there was a time where there was a couple year period where I was like, man, Jason Thompson would be really nice as, like, a backup big on the Mavericks or the Spurs. Like, he's that type of guy. And, you know, I was probably wrong about that. But, you know, you're right. Give him 3 months, and maybe the Warriors turn him into, like, a pretty decent role player.
Yeah. The magic fairy dust that they've sprinkled over everyone, where Luke Walton is a Hall of Fame coach, and everyone is unstoppable.
Hey, if Luke Walton wins Coach of the Year, I still want my Kerr pick to count.
It will.
Okay.
It will.
I did, because I picked Warriors coach to win Coach of the Year.
You may go back in there and just like...
Yeah, just change it to Warriors coach.
Like do one of those meld Facebook things.
Oh, yeah.
And meld his face.
One of those Conan O'Brien if they mated.
Yes. Just combine those two. So the Warriors are in a really good place right now.
Yes.
The team they played last night to set the record at 16-0.
Mm.
Not so much.
Man, I'm fed up. I'm so sick of Byron Scott. I'm so sick of the dumb things he says. Like, I wrote about it yesterday. I talked about it a little bit on the pod yesterday. But, like, I'm so sick of it. Like, it's just dumb.
I've been on this. Like, I started noticing this in preseason.
Yeah, you've been all over this.
They said it. He had comments in preseason that said, we're going to put Kobe on a 30-minute restriction, and it's my job to make sure that I don't bend that. And I want to make sure I do what's best for the club and for Kobe and for everybody. And this is a development year, and we're not going to put winning first. Like, we need to understand what the priority is. And then a week into the season, he has completely abandoned all of it. All of it.
There's no structure.
And he again defended Kobe last night.
Well, it's not even... I mean... All right, Kobe was awful, right? 1 of 14, 4 points. He's now, I think, what was the stat I saw? Like, he's now on a streak of 12 games of under 25 points and under 50% shooting from the field, which is like a career high for him. That's like, you would look at Kobe now and be like, yeah, of course. But like, to not get either 25 points or 50% shooting in any game, like, is hard for any player to do. Even the role, even like, you know, Bismack Biyombo can make 2 of 4 dunks, right? Like, that's kind of a tough stat not to shoot 50% in a game for that many games in a row. But with, you know, with Kobe, like, all right, Kobe was awful, but it's the fact that you parlay the backing up Kobe and justifying, you know, your buddy's horrible play, and then, you know, next question or previous question, someone says, well, why didn't D'Angelo Russell play minutes in the fourth? And he's like, oh, I just didn't see a point. What? You didn't see a point. You're the basketball coach. You're supposed to be developing this player.
This is the second time he's done this, where he said when the game was tight, he put in Lou Williams and Nick Young and said, I felt like we had a better chance to win the game with them. And in another blowout, and again last night, he says there's no point in getting him in garbage time.
Why not?
What possibly would it hurt? What is the benefit comparatively of having Nick Young and Meta World Peace and Huertas, who has been a disaster?
He has not been good.
Desastuertas for them. Why are they out there and D'Angelo Russell is on the bench? And there's like a lot of indications. I will tell you straight up my read on it. I believe that there are sources within the organization leaking to various media outlets that there are sources within the coaching staff basically telling reporters D'Angelo Russell's got a bad attitude. That's my read on it. I don't know if that's true. That's speculation on my part, but having done this now for 8 years and read a lot of media reports and learned a lot of how this stuff works, my read on it is that the coaching staff is telling reporters D'Angelo's got an attitude problem. And some of the reporters are like, oh, that's not good. And some of the reporters are like, I think we got a coaching problem is what we got.
Well, funny enough, I've actually heard from a couple of people of like, one, that is very much happening, that they are leaking that kind of stuff. And two, like, not everyone's buying this. So that's a dead-on, like, read on the situation, because that does seem to be happening. I don't know, you know, I don't know if it's Byron, I don't know if it's development staff, I don't know who it is, but like, there is that idea of like, oh, they're saying Russell has an attitude problem, and it's like, maybe he doesn't. Maybe it's just a bad situation, or maybe he does. Who knows? Like,
there's weird stuff.
It's like, really weird.
There's weird stuff like Clarkson and Russell are supposed to be like best friends off the court, but they hang out all the time. But then last week they asked Clarkson about Russell's development, and Clarkson said, well, you know, he's just got to be patient. Like, this, I went through this, and this is kind of what happens, and like, you just got to be patient, and you'll get more minutes, and you'll kind of get eased in. And they said, like, have you given him advice? And he's like, yeah, you know, I've been in his ear, and I'm just trying to help him in any way I can. And they asked Russell, has Clarkson told you anything? And Russell said, no. And, okay, what? And so maybe Russell is just saying no because he just thinks that's what he's supposed to say.
Right, yeah.
There's like a perception that Russell has an attitude problem, and it's kind of reflected in his comments, which like everyone's kind of like, well, he seems really bummed out. Like he doesn't have a great attitude about this when you're asked about it in post game. I'm like, of course he doesn't. He's a number two pick and he's getting hammered every night by everyone because he looks like a bust because his coach can't run a system and doesn't play him.
Right.
Like,
I don't know. I don't know how relatable this is. Well, I guess it's kind of relatable. Earlier in the season, earlier in this 1 month season so far, reporters were asking Karl Anthony Towns, like, oh, what has KG talked to you about? Like, how has he helped you? And he, like, said, oh, we talked about this. And then reporters asked KG, you know, oh, Karl said that you guys, you know, talked about this. And KG kind of joked, like, oh, well, I'm going to have to talk to him about, you know, keeping conversations private. And then after that, like, Towns has kind of been a bit of a cliche machine.
Right.
So that could actually be a thing of, like, you don't tell what you know the advice or what, and that's not always the case. But maybe that's the dynamic there. I don't know. That's just me speculating. But I do know that happened with Towns and KG. I don't know if Clarkson and Russell qualify for that kind of relationship. But I don't know. Maybe that's kind of the disconnect there.
And meanwhile, Kobe said in the offseason, he said, I'm just gonna be a spot up guy. Like that's what I'm gonna be, is I'm just gonna be a spot up guy. Like, I know my role. And Jerry Buss, I looked this up last night, not Jerry, sorry, Jim Buss. Jim Buss said in preseason, he said Kobe's gotta understand his role. So Buss said that and Kobe said that. And then Kobe goes out and he shoots 14 shots. He shot, what, 22 the other night. He's playing all these big minutes. He's doing all of this. And then after the game, Kobe says, they've got to help me out more. Like, I'm genuinely kind of disappointed. Like, I genuinely kind of am.
I wonder how much of that is...
whole Kobe and, like, I'm endlessly confident and I'm never going to admit weakness.
Yeah.
That's fine. That's okay. Everyone loves you for that. But, like, come on, man. Like, you shot 1 of 14.
I do wonder how much of that is just embarrassment, right?
But that's the thing, is, like, you got to, you know.
I'm not saying that justifies it, but I do wonder how much of that is just, like, does he actually believe that, or is he just, like, was he embarrassed that he did that on national TV?
Yeah. And, like, I think the better thing for him to do would be, like, well, clearly I need to take a step back and try and find other ways to help the offense because my shot's just not there right now.
Sure.
I know that would hurt him physically to say. It might take him 4 tries to get that out, to say my shot is not there right now. But, like, him saying I could have scored 80 and the Lakers wouldn't beat the Warriors, well, one, that's not how math works. And two,
no, you couldn't have.
No, you couldn't have. And, you know, and when he says I could average 35 and we'd be, what, 3-11? No, that's not accurate at all. Mm-hmm. But the bigger problem is that you're taking possessions and you're just beating them into oblivion. Like Gallagher with a watermelon. Like, it's not... There's a reference for you. Like,
wow.
Like, he is obliterating possessions for them. And at some point, there has to be a recognition of that things are different. And I said this 2 days ago, and I said it again last night. I will say it again today. Where is the Buss family?
Yeah, like, I mean, there is a real leadership problem. And maybe it's wrong of me to just use Byron Scott as the problem. I do think he's the majority of the problem. But at the same time, the Buss family does need to step in and be like, look, we've got to figure this out. Like, you've just got to get rid of this idea that you can win games. It's not, and it doesn't mean you stop trying to win games, but, like, there's a balance between the development and trying to win games, right?
And
what you're doing right now, you have almost zero chance of winning games. So how is that what you keep with? I get the process and you have your core tenets and all this stuff, but your process sucks.
This is my biggest fear, because this is really how this seems to me. Everything coming out of Byron Scott, people are like, what's he thinking? Or why would he do this? Or why is this not vibe? This to me smells exactly like a guy saying, I'm going to get fired if I don't win.
Yeah.
If I don't get this team back to 500, I'm going to get fired. And so I'm going to do – and he knows the only way for him to get back to 500 is to play the vets. And – like, you could say, like, but D'Angelo Russell's better. He may be, but he's a rookie. D'Angelo Russell has the worst plus minus of anybody on the team.
Yeah.
Like,
here's a fun little comparison. Per 100 possessions, Kobe Bryant 24 points, D'Angelo Russell 19. Kobe Bryant 5.8 assists, D'Angelo Russell 5.4 assists. Kobe 6.9 rebounds, Russell 8.4 rebounds.
Huh.
And then Kobe shooting 31%, Russell shooting 40%. Kobe shooting 19% from three on 11 attempts per 100 possessions. Russell shooting 32% on 7 attempts per 100 possessions. Like, you know, Russell's been not good. But he's been better than Kobe, or at least as good, which is not an accomplishment this year, but it's kind of funny of this idea of, like, oh, you know, we need to ride Kobe's hot hand. Why? Because he was good 4 years ago?
And really, there's a lot of Lakers fans that are saying, like, why are we just talking about Byron all the time? Like, what if Russell's just the wrong pick? Like, what if they just should have taken Porzingis? Like, what if he was just the wrong pick?
You know what? I don't agree, but I think that's possible. But hey, you know what? Maybe you should try to find out. Maybe we should find out if Byron Scott's the problem.
It's too late.
Right, exactly. You're not going to go back and change the pick.
And you can't sit here and tell me, like, D'Angelo Russell's not Adam Morrison.
Right. He's not DeJuan Wagner.
You know? Like, maybe he's a bust. It's possible. We miss on guys all the time. It would shock every draft analyst out there.
Right.
Like, D'Angelo Russell being a bad NBA player would genuinely stun a lot of people. Like, Darius Soriano has pointed this out a lot of times. He's like, Russell's making some fantastic passes and guys are missing shots.
Yeah.
Like, they can't score, they can't defend, they can't do anything. And like, I keep comparing this team to, actually. I keep comparing it to the Knicks last year, in which we were like, you know, they should be better. Like, they should be okay. And then it was like, oh no.
Oh no, this is what they are.
They are not. That's kind of where I'm at with this Lakers team, and God, they need to fire him and bring in Scott Brooks.
At least Melo had the decency to get injured after 40 games and never play after the All-Star break. Will Kobe sacrifice that way? Probably not.
Russ, I can never pronounce his last name, Bengston?
Yeah.
He wrote a really terrific op-ed for Complex, an open letter to Kobe, which he was like, I hate open letters, but I need to do this. And was like, you need to retire. Like, you need to retire tomorrow. Not at the end of the season, not in 6 months, now. You need to walk away. It's over. It's done. You got to walk away now. And like, that's a huge Kobe fan talking. And that to me has been one of the really interesting dynamics, is like, Kobe fans even are like, God, like, this has got to end. This is just bad. Bad for everybody.
Well, back to the Russell thing. The possibility of Porzingis and Okafor and let's throw Moutier in there. Like, the likelihood that those guys are better players than Russell and will be better players in the future. I don't think that would really shock anybody. It's the idea that Russell is bad, is an awful player, and will always be an awful player. Like, that's the that's the shocking part, right? Is if you think that that's a possibility. It's not, oh, did they pick the wrong guy? It's, did they pick a guy who can't play? Like, that's the question that I think has a pretty obvious answer to, but I guess, you know, we have been wrong about guys before, and every once in a while, you know, a number two pick kind of sucks.
So, speaking of bad, and this will not, this podcast will not do well on Facebook.
It will not be shareable. if it even makes it up there.
So, I wrote last night, and it's up today. You can find it at CBSSports.com, on James Harden. And I got a little hot take-ish with it. And that's like a weird phrase to use, because a lot of times it just means like something that's wrong. Like, something outlandish that's wrong. And I didn't write something that's wrong. But I am at a point where I really thought that maybe this Rockets team had developed some level of infrastructure for leadership, and it appears to me at this point that it is completely absent, and it is most notably absent from its best players. I actually don't blame Dwight Howard as much. The behavior that I see Dwight Howard taking, both in comments to the media, during practice, on the court, all those things, and that's a very limited scope, but the best I can do, it does seem like Dwight Howard's still trying to be like talking on defense and communicating and sharing what needs to happen and like trying to build some level of keeping this thing together. And then there's James Harden, and I just do not know what the hell is going on with Harden.
Maybe this is just, all right, this is probably wrong, but I just want to ask the question, 'cause I do think it's worth asking, even if the answer is obvious. Is it possible that he looked at last year and he played his ass off? He tried on defense. He wasn't the joke on defense that he had been prior. He was dragging a team to the 2 seed in an incredible Western Conference. Just played his ass off night in, night out, was incredible. And whether you like the aesthetics of how he plays and hunts for contact or not, he was incredibly effective. And, you know, one of the best players in the league. Is it possible he went through all that, didn't win MVP? Sure, he got the players MVP, but I don't know if that's actual award considering he didn't show up. But, you know, didn't win MVP and just thought, well, why am I going to do that again? You know, like, I don't know what that would say about him. I don't know if that makes him a worse player than we thought he was, or, you know, I don't know what that is, but I do wonder, like, is that a possibility? Because it is real people with emotions, and some people, you know, go through stuff like that and end up thinking, like, well, why did I try so hard if I didn't get what I wanted? I wonder if that's potentially in play here.
The lesson is never try.
Never try. You and I are in on that. Never try.
So I think that there's a lot of theories, okay? And this is becoming like, it's almost like a conspiracy thing. So I will run you very quickly through this.
Okay.
The audience, rather, you know all these. He tried really hard last year, didn't get what he wanted, so he's just like, screw it. This team went deep in the playoffs. It's the third time that, the Rockets have made a playoff run. He's getting tired at age 25 and is basically coasting until November, and as are most of the Rockets, or until January, rather. Kim Kardashian, Khloe, sorry. Khloe Kardashian, the base god curse, injury, and then like unattributable malaise. Rockets fans are trying to sell me that the effort has been better. There were flashes of effort. This is the problem. There were flashes of effort in the New York game, but and this really gets this is how the conversation with Harden gets really problematic defensively. And I wrote about this. When he has a good moment, the Rockets fans will respond with, "See?" And I'm like, "You're supposed to do that." Like, you don't get credit for busting through a screen and making sure his man doesn't shoot an open jumper. You're supposed to do that. You don't get credit for contesting an offensive rebound. You're supposed to do that. Because right. I did a big breakdown 2 weeks ago, and the same problems are still there, where his guy is crashing the glass, and Harden just is not trying for the offensive rebound at all. Does not care. Does not, like, he's watching his guy get the board. There is no effort being displayed. And that can't be. If your guy's going to be down there, you know, you have to go help. If you're standing down there, you have to help.
I wonder if part of that is just having Dwight Howard on your team, and you just assume that Dwight Howard's going to grab the rebound. And maybe, and I don't even know if that's a real thing or a real excuse or whatever, but I do wonder if that plays into it, because honestly, if like DeAndre Jordan was on my team, I'd probably never box out, because I would just assume he was going to grab the rebound. Although, maybe if you're a professional basketball player, don't go off what I would do.
If you play with Andre Drummond, you would just be Corey Brewer.
Oh my god. Just, I wouldn't even show up on defense. I would be spotting up right now.
Like, a shot goes up and you're already in place with your hands up the other end of the court.
You know what I'd be? I'd be Deion Waiters. I'd just be calling for the ball, even on defense.
What else is going on?
Someone asked me yesterday, and I didn't really have an answer for it, and I'm kind of writing about them right now for tomorrow. How are the Pacers doing this? I mean, they've been very good defensively.
You're in the same place I am. I started doing, I was kind of like waiting. I was like, well, let's see. And then I started last night doing, what's an adequate phrase? Because if I say film work, I just want to punch myself.
Video work.
Video review.
Video review. In the replay center.
Yeah, I'm doing video. I'm getting my Sakakis on. Yeah. I'm doing video review on the Pacers. I watched their game at the gym last night versus the Wizards when they hit a franchise record number of threes. And I've started to kind of go back, and I'm just like, because, all right, the offense is one thing. Basically, the NBA is showing right now that if you put enough shooters on the floor, you're going to be able to create offense. That's where we're at right now. The shooting is good enough in this league at this point.
The Hornets are doing that.
Yeah. If you just put enough shooters on the floor, you're going to generate offense. But I am a Jordan Hill fan. I've been high on – I like his game. I like to have college. I liked it in New York. I liked it in Houston. I liked it in L.A. I like it in Indiana. You, not so much.
Not particularly.
Not particularly. Frank Vogel's made him into a capable defender.
It's weird.
Like, it's working. It is just working. And they're basically, like, a lot of what they were doing last night was the Wizards were like, all right, we're going to punish you with Nene. And they were like, we'll take our chances. We don't think Nene can hit as many points per possession as you're going to need to keep up with a three-point shooting. It's the Warriors thing.
Yeah.
It's you can't punish us enough because we're still going to hit enough threes because your defenders aren't going to be able to cover, especially when Paul George is knocking them down off the dribble at 35 feet.
We're still in this weird space, too, with sample size where prior to last night's game, they were 2, 4, 6, 8, 10, 12, 14, 16. They were 18th in the league in offensive rating at 100.9 points per 100 possessions. After last night's incredible shooting display, they are now 4, 6, 8. They're ninth in offense. They jumped up to ninth at 102.3 points per 100 possessions.
Yeah. So there's all these outliers. It's getting back to the Warriors just for a second.
Yeah.
It's what I've known. Like, the Lakers were 24th in defense going into last night. They're 28th now.
Yeah.
Like, The Warriors nuke your stats. The Grizzlies are still trying to climb out of the hole.
It may take another month for the Grizzlies to get out of that hole.
Yeah, well, here's what's amazing. Like, for the season, I ran the numbers yesterday. They would have the 6th best offense and the 8th best defense if you take out the Warriors and the Cavs game. They just got nuked.
Interesting.
The Warriors just nuked them. Yeah. And you're like, well, you can't take those out. Those games count, too. And I'm like, no, I'm saying that. I'm just saying, if we count the games that they play against mortals,
right.
The numbers look differently. But yeah, like, yeah. The Pacers...
But that shouldn't discount what their numbers are right now, because they do have those moments.
I want to get super geekish with you here on this.
Let's geek out.
I've noticed this, and I've noticed it a lot with the small ball teams. The Warriors are actually, funnily enough, not doing it as much this year. I'm of the opinion right now that handoffs are almost impossible to defend at this point.
Way too hard.
Like,
way too hard to defend. Harder to defend than the pick and roll.
They are when Paul George comes off of a handoff, there's nothing you can do.
Mm-mm.
Because the second he gets that, he's in the air. Because he has no problem with shooting with his screener right next to him.
Because you can't overplay it if you're the helping big or helping guard, whoever is guarding the guy handing off the ball.
Mm-hmm.
Because if you overplay it, then the guy with the ball can just drive straight to the hoop. Yep. So I guess it's the idea of like, all right, I'm just going to jump it in the case, in the chance that they hand it off to take away the three and hope the backline defense is there to be in position to cut off a drive. But even then, you still have a chance to, like, you drive, you get the big to commit to helping from the weak side, and then you're still moving the ball, right? You're like, you can still move the ball and swing it around the perimeter in some fashion. So I think it's kind of impossible to defend.
Porter jumped wide to curtail the drive because on a previous play, he'd gone short and George drove around him.
Yeah.
And so he jumps out wide, and then George goes middle.
Yeah.
And if you somehow manage to get right in front of him, you're still going to be far enough back to where he's going to have the jumper. Like, that handoff play, I've seen that across the league, and I really want to, because Synergy actually doesn't track it. Like, it does some of it, but you have to kind of find it.
Yeah.
Like, I mean, it's a bitch to defend.
It's really hard, and especially, like, I mean, you can defend it when some guys are running it, but, like, when you have someone like Paul George.
It's impossible. I just looked it up. Now, a lot of these don't get logged the right way in Synergy, so some of them get they get described differently than a handoff.
Yeah.
But for what Synergy has in a small number of possessions, Paul George is scoring 1.11 points per possession on handoffs, which is obscenely good.
I mean, if you ran an entire game of Pacers offense with that play at that rate, they'd score 111 points per 100 possessions, which would not lead the league because, Warriors, but they would be second in the league.
Right.
That would be the second best offense.
Right. So that to me is like one of the big trends that we're seeing a lot is...
Here's an interesting thing on Paul George, real quick.
Yeah.
He's averaging 25.9 points per game, 8.4 rebounds, 4.8 assists with a 59.7% true shooting percentage. Which is stupid good.
That is stupid.
To take the 25, 8, and 4.5 with 59% true shooting percentage or better, Kareem did it, Jordan did it, LeBron did it, Larry Bird did it twice, Barkley did it when he was MVP in 93, and Paul George. That's it. That's the list.
And we're noticing it with George. I'm really excited for him just because of what he went through.
Yeah.
Like, for him to do this coming off that leg injury, and people were like, is he ever going to be the same? And I was like, it's a fractured leg. He will be the same. Like, he will be the exact same guy. Like, there are some injuries that ruin you. Like, the Achilles, Kobe's finding out.
Broken bones don't.
His kind of model of player, though, those long, athletic forwards that can play the two. We just talked about that handoff thing. Lark looked it up. Jimmy Butler scoring 1.7 points per possession on handoffs.
Mother of God.
Mo Williams, the Cavs are doing this a lot. They are using a lot of handoffs.
To put that in perspective, that's almost as good as the Warriors small ball lineup.
Mo Williams, who has been killer for the Cavs this season, 1.6 points per possession. Wes Matthews, 1.5. Like, the guys are... Hey, DeMar DeRozan, 1.4. That's an effective way to use DeRozan.
Yeah, I like that. I like that in theory.
Melo, 1.3. Like, I think a lot of the better offenses are using that effectively because you can use it with small, quick guards, and you can use it with long, athletic forwards who can shoot. And, that combination, I think, is is really effective, and I'm not entirely sure how to guard it. So
I don't know. I mean, somebody will figure it out, right? Like, that's just there is no impossible thing to defend over the long haul of basketball.
Right.
Someone comes around and innovates, and
Sorry, can we go back to the Warriors for just 1 second?
Sure, they're the best thing to talk about right now.
Right. Nate Timmons, who writes for BSNDenver.com here in Denver, has a really good idea, actually, for how to attack the Warriors.
Snipers in every luxury box?
So, you can't hack a Boga, because they'll be like, all right, we'll go to the death lineup. Good luck. Like, no problem. You want the small lineup? You got it. But when they go to the small lineup with Iguodala at the two, or at the three, depending on your perception, hack him. He's a terrible free throw shooter.
Yeah, I mean, how much does that? I don't know. How much does that do? I don't know that you can kill their flow in that sense, because I think it would just piss them off.
It might piss them off, but I still think that if they're not getting up and down the floor, if they're still, we've seen them.
Yeah, I guess if you're taking away tempo, sure. Yeah.
You take away two things. You take away tempo, and you take away threes. So, like. I think the objective is to get that lineup off the floor. That's the thing.
Yeah.
It's like you just want to get that lineup off the floor.
Sure.
So that you can match up better.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I feel like the reason the hack of stuff works, and especially if you get the coach to take out that player, is due to an insecurity.
Right.
Feeling, all right, well, we aren't good enough to withstand this kind of thing if they're taking away these possessions. I don't know that the Warriors would have that mentality. They may be too confident at this point, anything's worth a shot at this point.
Holy mother of God. Sorry. Okay, I just looked up spot-up numbers for the Pacers. Are you ready for this?
Sure.
Field goal percentage on spot-up shots. We're going to run down this list. Rodney Stuckey, 47%.
Ooh.
George Hill, 51.9%. Jeez. Monte Ellis, 40%. Paul George.
I like that Monte's 40%. Monte is perpetually a 40% shooter.
Yep. Paul George, 50%.
Oh, my God.
CJ Miles, 46.3%. They've got 1, 2, 3, 4 shooters plus LaVoy Allen on, like, 6 shots.
Sure.
Shooting better than 45% on spot up.
Oh, my God.
Frank, I didn't... My thing going in with the Pacers was I don't think that they can do this. Like, we've never seen Frank Vogel coach a good offense. They're trying to adjust to an entirely new style. Like, this is not – like, I can't believe that even as good as Vogel is, he can just switch gears and do this. Nope. Turns out Frank Vogel can. Definitely can. Great coach.
Yeah, he is a great coach. I love Frank Vogel. I do still wonder how sustainable this is for this season.
Yeah, I think –
They haven't had a particularly tough schedule. I think, you know, depending on how you feel about strength of schedule from Basketball Reference, like, they're 17th. So it's not like they have a cake schedule, but they haven't exactly had a tough
schedule.
I don't either. I've had some people say, no, there's some validity to it, and I've had some people say, no, it's complete crap. But just, like, if we're using it as a decent measurement of what they've had to play, 17th, so not a cake schedule, but not a tough schedule either, like, just right in the middle. I don't know how much that affects what they're doing, because they may just be executing it so well that it doesn't matter who they play. It's not going to be about the offense. It'll be about the defense.
For a little trip down memory lane for perspective, here's where the league was at 1 year ago. On November 24, 2014, the Raptors were 12-2. The Wizards were 9-3. They wound up with, the fifth seed? The Bulls were 9-5. They were pretty much where they are, just the same team always.
Exact same team.
The Heat were 8-6 before they fell out of the playoffs.
Yeah.
The Hawks were only 6-5 before they won 60 games. The Cavaliers were 6-7.
And they turned out to be a disaster.
They turn out to be a disaster. The Celtics were 4-8. They wound up making the playoffs. The Grizzlies were the best. The Grizzlies at this time last year were the best team in the Western Conference at 12-2. They had a better record than the Warriors.
Ooh.
Those were good times before.
That was a fun month.
That was a fun month. The Warriors were 10-2. The Blazers were 11-3. The Rockets were 11-3. The Spurs were 9-4. The Clippers were 8-5. The Suns were 9-6. The Pelicans were 7-5. So a lot of stuff can change. The Lakers were 3-11. Turns out some things don't change. The Thunder were 3-12. Because remember they were
that. Oh, right. Because, I mean, it was like Reggie Jackson and Kendrick Perkins.
Yeah. Yeah, that was funny. Not really. So, by the way, the Grizzlies have now won 5 of 6. So if everyone can get off of the they're dead and the league has passed them by, like, I'm fine if you're like, well, no, like, they can still be a good team, but they can't win. They can't beat the Warriors or the Spurs or the Clippers in the playoffs. I'm fine with that. That's or the Thunder. That's cool. I don't have a problem with that. Those are all really good teams. But we could stop with the NBA has passed them by and they're extinct and they're going to be in the lottery and they're going to be totally terrible forever. Can we quit that for a while?
But you
can
know what's you know it? What's a terrifying thought?
What?
Zombie Grizzlies.
I will say this. I wrote this at the end of my Grizzlies, like if you want to panic, here's how you panic column, my hypothetical panic column, which is basically like there's nothing you can do. You have to ride this out. This team responds the best when everyone counts them out. Whenever everyone's like, they should be good, then they're like, nah. Not really. And then when everyone's like, well, they've got no shot. Dun-da-da-da!
Fast-moving zombie Grizzlies. Terrifying. Man. Like, make a movie about that. We had Zombieverse. Like, zombie Grizzlies cannot be that hard to do with CGI.
And it is so appropriate that this team turned around when they traded for Mario Chalmers. It's so appropriate.
They looked at things and things weren't going well. They're like, well, you know what we need? More volatility.
Well, I think it was they were in a bad place and they were like, we need a shooter. Okay, we need to find a shooter who no one believes in, that everyone makes fun of, whose career is basically over and is basically a misfit toy. Mario Chalmers!
I like to think that he just appeared in a vision to them as they were in the boardroom discussing this.
Like, appears in like a puff of smoke and then like he like he was on his couch eating like grapes or something. I can't figure out the Hawks.
Man, they're good.
Are they?
Yeah, I think they are.
I don't know. They were terrible there for a week, and then they...
I know, but they're still working Thabo back. They're still working Kyle Korver back. You know, Dennis Schroeder's an enigma. I tweeted last night, I need one season where Rick Carlisle coaches Dennis Schroeder. I need just one. I just need to see that carnage. I think they're fine.
Well,
I mean,
they say that because you'll only get one after.
Right, that's true. Yeah, I'm not asking for two because that's impossible. I don't know. I mean, they're playing. You know, they're figuring out their rotation with like, how much can they play Lamar Patterson? How much Mike Scott can you possibly deal with? You know, I think they're good, and I think they'll be fine. I think they'll be probably a top four team in the East just because, or at least record wise because. It is a tough system to deal with on random nights.
What's a team that you found yourself being surprised to enjoy watching?
Surprised to enjoy watching? Maybe Charlotte.
Yeah,
I'm really enjoying the Charlotte Hornets.
And we got to talk about this since we've ragged on him so much. Spencer Hawes is playing well.
He is.
He's playing so well.
Yeah.
And that makes me really uncomfortable.
Oh, it's not good for anybody. But he is playing really well.
Jeremy Lin's been great.
Yeah, Jeremy Lin's really like a good role player.
Yeah.
He's a good role player. Like if you want him to run your team, all right, calm down. Can't do that. But as like a second point guard or in a 2-point guard lineup, I talked to Steve Clifford, well, with other reporters, it wasn't exclusive, but talked to him before the season started, and he was like really playing up like, we love the idea of Jeremy Lin in a 2-point guard lineup, and it's a good thing.
Marvin Williams is the guy that an NBA GM asked me the other day, who's the one guy you would trade for in this league for the team that he manages, and I would say, you need Marvin Williams.
I don't know if Marvin Williams on the Lakers is a good idea.
I wish Kupchak would call. Mitch, contact CBS. I will give you my number. Hit me up on Twitter. I will provide you my number. We can talk. I have some things I would like to ask you.
What an idea.
I don't like watching Milwaukee.
I'm so out on them. They could correct it. I'm not a Monroe guy. I'm not a Michael Carter Williams guy. I was so encouraged with them last year. I mean, they're, I think, the second worst defense in the league right now.
Yeah, well, and man, Zaza and Jared Dudley should not mean that much.
That's true. I mean, that's kind of the thing. And, they're still working guys back. Jabari Parker's not 100%. And he's still got some time to, I don't know that he'll be 100% this entire season just because that process takes a while. But, I just don't like anything that I'm seeing.
I like watching Monroe still. I still watch Monroe, and
he's funny to watch on defense. Like, it's amusing, but it's kind of amusing in a painful way.
I never see it. I never notice it for whatever reason. He never catches off of us.
He just wanders away like Mr. Magoo. And you just hope he doesn't fall off the beam high above the skyscraper that's being built.
The Sixers are getting to be a story.
Yeah, I'm not... they're a story. I kind of like what I see, for the most part.
What?
Well, I mean, relative to expectations, right? Like, you don't expect them to be a good offense, but I like watching Okafor. I like watching Noel on defense. Somehow TJ McConnell's an NBA player right now, and he's been kind of decent. It's just, I don't know how you, like, you just can't judge this team. Well, no, all right, you can judge them. You can't judge, but it's tough to know what's really going on because they don't have an NBA guard rotation. That pains me because I do like Nick Stauskas, and I do like Isaiah Cannon, but they don't have NBA guards. So how do you properly judge a team that doesn't have a backcourt? You know, that's the tough part.
It's weird because I think if they had an NBA quality guard, just a point guard, I think they would be miles better on both ends of the floor. They just need somebody capable, like, you know. I mean, you put Patrick Beverley there, you know?
Yeah. Like, can you imagine how that team would look with, you know, Brandon Knight?
Oh, yeah. Or,
you know? He's pretty good, but, you know.
And even Jennings.
Yeah.
Like, throw Brandon Jennings on there and just let him go nuts.
Yeah.
You know?
I like that.
There are serious cracks in the Trust the Process crew. This is the first time I've seen the cult get this, like, seriously start to be like, what are we doing? Because this is, I mean, and they're getting mad at Brett Brown, who everyone kind of agrees is a good coach, but...
Yeah, I don't think he's the scapegoat here.
His margin of error is so, like, small, you know?
Yeah.
Like, he's got to perfectly manage everything just for them to have a shot.
For them to be competitive, yeah.
Yeah. I think who else have... Man, your Minnesota guys, they're 6-8. They came back down to earth. But they're just they're a fun team to watch.
They're scrappy. They're really scrappy, and Andrew Wiggins is unreal.
It's too bad that Karl Anthony Towns lost the Rookie of the Year because Jahlil Okafor had a better game than him in one game.
Hey, bad. Jahlil can have the award. I'll take Towns.
Ooh.
Seriously, like the award is so it's nice for a young guy to get that recognition, so that's fine. But like, if it's Karl Anthony Towns wins the award, or Karl Anthony Towns is on the Wolves, which I don't know why that would be an ultimatum, but like, let's just say that was. I'll take Towns any day. I mean, I'll take Towns over Okafor any day, and that's not a knock on Okafor. I just think Towns is that much better.
I asked you yesterday on our conference call when we could start jumping ahead and talking about the award too early because Okafor versus Porzingis versus Towns is going to get ugly.
Oh, it's going to be brutal.
Twitter is going to be just carnage.
It's going to be brutal. Come March. Yeah. Andrew Wiggins is just a monster.
Yeah.
I'm so, like, he had a slow start, and he had the back thing, and he had the shoulder thing, and people were like, he's so passive. That dude is killing teams right now.
I have to tell you.
Killing.
I have to tell you. Conrad. You know Conrad.
Yeah.
Do you know what Conrad was saying while you were gone?
Oh, no.
Conrad says he's DeMar DeRozan.
I mean, that's just not accurate in any way.
Get him, Zach.
I don't even have a response. That's just dumb.
Says he can't shoot three, so he's like DeMar DeRozan.
Okay. No, that's not even worth responding. That's just dumb. No offense, Conrad, but that's really stupid.
I cover the Nuggets. Nuggets are about to get, like, it's going to be a dark, dark period for a little bit.
Not great.
They needed to win the Suns game when they were up 17 in the second half. They needed to win that game very, very, very badly. And then they got sluggish, and they put in a bad rotation, and then their three-point defense fell apart, and Brandon Knight caught fire. And now they play the Warriors Sunday, and they actually gave a really good performance against the Warriors. They ran out of things to throw at them.
They put up a good fight against the Clippers, too, I think.
Yeah.
You know, Free didn't play right. I think what happened to Randy Foy?
I don't know. I don't know, like, what... it's not like he's ever been a really good shooter. I like Randy Foy a lot as a locker room guy, and he's a pro, but... And there's nights when he's going to hit a couple things, but...
He's a 37% shooter for his career.
Is he?
From three.
That's crazy.
He had some monster years when he was bouncing, like, Clippers, Jazz, in the first year in Denver.
Yeah, those days are over, so... They can't shoot threes and they can't defend them. It turns out that's kind of important in today's NBA.
That is an emphasis right now.
I've been saying the same thing about Denver, which is they're going to get really bad and everyone's going to have a lot of jokes about how bad Denver is over the next month. And then the schedule kind of turns in January. And I think by that point, they'll be in a better place. I'm really tired let's just be honest, Twitter. I'm really tired of Twitter throwing at me whatever injuries you have and saying that's why. Like, no, I'm sorry. You have systemic problems. If you're giving up, if you're the third worst defense in the league, you have bigger problems than whoever it is. Like, the Rockets are a disaster. Would Donatas Moadiakhunas help? Yes. Donatas Moadiakhunas is not why the Rockets are bad.
Right.
But Denver was going to be bad anyway. They are worse without Joffrey LeVern and Yusuf Nurkic because their center rotation right now is Hixon, Jokic, Arthur. That's two power forwards and a 19-year-old.
Not ideal.
You know, and Jokic has shown some good things. And J.J. Hixon has played the best defense I have seen of his entire career. But it's just not – there's just not enough there for them to sustain. And that's one of the reasons that their three-point defense gets shredded.
I know he's shooting horribly, but I'm not concerned about it at all. Moutier is at least enough to – well, all right, maybe not locally because Broncos. But Moutier is at least enough to, like, keep interest on the team in some respect all season, right? I mean, he's pretty fun.
He really is. It's funny. I'm covering him pretty – like, I'm not writing about him a lot, but I'm paying very close attention to pretty much everything he does. And I'm very impressed with everything. Like, he got in a fight with Michael Malone last night, and both of their reactions were really good.
Michael Malone was fighting everybody last night.
Yeah,
Blake Griffin, Emmanuel Moutier.
He's not handling this losing streak well. He's not going, I have to be patient, and like this is really testing him.
He's not a guy that likes losing. That's for sure.
He's really competitive, and Moutier is really competitive, and a lot of it is that Moutier can't find a quality shot right now. I asked Malone about it a little bit. He goes up into the air without knowing what he's going to do, and he's used to.
That's something you can get away with in high school.
Yeah, and in China, you can do that. Yeah. And in the NBA, you turn the ball over or you put up a bad shot.
Yeah,
that's why he's settling for a lot of leaning, step back, fade away. His off-balance jumper takes up a huge chunk of his offense. He's also had the bad luck of he keeps playing teams with huge rim protectors.
Not ideal.
I'm trying to think. Like, you know, first, it was like Bogut really deterred him. Like Bogut gave him nightmares. When they played the Warriors, Tyson Chandler gave him problems. He played Chandler and then Bogut and then DeAndre. And then on Friday, he's got Tim Duncan. So
it'll be fun.
Yeah, he's got to play some of these smaller teams so he can get to the rim and get some confidence there. His passing instincts are really still very good. He needs to get his conditioning up a little bit so he can run a little bit more. He's really good in transition, and he's just not out in transition enough. His transition passing is brilliant. He still makes about 3 to 4 plays a game where you're like, wow. But he also makes 3 to 4 plays where you're just like, rookie.
Yeah, I don't know. I've caught most of his time on the court. I haven't seen everything, but I've caught most of it. But I don't know. I watch him, and I think, like, even the mistakes, I'm like, eh, that's not a big deal. Like, that's just dumb rookie stuff. Yeah. And I don't know. I'm very impressed by him.
Yeah, he is very worth being impressed by. You watch him enough that you start to pick apart kind of what he does. But the overall thing is, like, based off of what I've seen in this whole month of the season, I expect him to be an all-star by the end of his rookie contract. Like, that's how good I think he can be. And if he's not, then he's going to be one of those, like, on the cusp, hey, no one really sees how good this guy is.
Yeah, I agree with that.
So, there's that. What else is going on? Is there anything else?
I think that's good.
I feel like there are stories.
Are there stories?
I have one thing for you. If there's one team that you think should make a trade, who do you think it is?
Make a trade. Milwaukee?
Mm.
I think they're in real danger of regressing pretty hard. Mm. From last year, I mean. And I just, I don't know. I think they had, you know, with a core of Giannis and Jabari and Middleton, like, there is real potential there for the future, right? I mean, like, even if, like, you throw Monroe in there, obviously, because he's there for the next couple of years, but I don't know. Like, I don't know if it means bringing in a veteran. I don't know if it means Because I kind of thought bringing in Grievous Vasquez would kind of help a lot of that stuff. Even though, you know, he's obviously a flawed player, but I big guard, can shoot, good at passing the ball. Like, I just kind of felt, I felt like he could correct a lot of the problems Michael Carter-Williams has. But I don't know, like, I do feel like they need a real point guard.
I have this idea rattling around in my brain, and I need you to tell me whether I'm crazy or not. I have this idea of some sort of when he's eligible to be traded, which I thought was December 15th, but it turns out it's January 15th. DeAndre Jordan for Brooke Lopez.
I don't know why the Clippers do that. You're already a mess defensively. Like, Brooke's not a horrible defender, but he's not fixing their problem.
But I guess you can look at that the other way, right? Which is, if you're not getting better defensively and you have DeAndre Jordan, who's supposed to be this really great player, you could say, well, what if you take DeAndre off and your defense implodes? Or you can say, what if you don't really get all that much worse? Like, what if you're just the same, but you improve in other areas?
Yeah, but I don't think it's a bad theory. I just think you, by giving the ball, as much as you need to give the ball to Brooke Lopez for him to be effective and worth that transaction,
mm-hmm.
you're taking it out of Chris Paul's hands and Blake Griffin's hands a lot.
That's true.
So I worry about that balance. Like, how do you find that balance between those three?
It does seem like Blake's getting really tired by the end of games.
Yeah, that's true.
And so kind of the idea was, if you have better balance, then Griffin can be more effective and still have a wonderful game, but maybe be able to put up, like, redistribute a few of those points in the fourth quarter when the Warriors have just completely humiliated your 27-point lead.
Like, sure.
Maybe that's a way to go about it.
I would just worry about taking the ball out of Blake's hands.
Yeah.
Hey, do you know if Paul Pierce is alive? Do you think we can find him?
It's been rumored. Man, everyone's gotten old. Everyone, you know what's funny? Everyone's gotten old except the Spurs.
Except the Spurs. You know who's never going to get old too? The Warriors. They'll do this for 20 years.
20 years. 20 years. All right. Well, everybody have a great Thanksgiving.
Happy Thanksgiving if you celebrate it. I'm going home. Going to Sacramento. I have a flight tonight. My sister's actually in the country.
Really?
My sister lives in Australia. She's in the country on business, and she's flying up late tonight, leaving early Friday morning. But I actually, you know, get to see my sister, which happens maybe once a year if I'm lucky.
That's awesome.
Yeah, so very excited. Going up there. I'll be back Saturday because there's a, I think, Pelicans are in town.
What's your favorite Thanksgiving dish?
It was my grandma's recipe, but my mom makes this, like, it's like this candied sweet potato dish that is, like, it will give you diabetes and it'll give you a heart attack, but it's totally worth it. Like, it's in it. You only need, like, a small scoop of it, too, but it's, like, it's just so damn good.
I just dropped a disgusting amount of money at Whole Foods, and I never shop at Whole Foods because it's expensive.
Right.
So, like, Thanksgiving and Christmas are the two times that I just go crazy and buy all the things that I want to. So I've got, like, the really nice mushrooms and all these kind of things. We're doing, like, a healthier Thanksgiving because all of us are trying to lose weight. And so, like, I'm rolling with Cornish hens. Where are you on Cornish
hens? Ooh, I'm a huge Cornish hen fan.
Yeah.
Love me some Cornish hen. That's a great call.
I think it's really underrated because I love turkey. I really do. I love turkey, but there's so damn much of it, and it's such a pain to fix.
Yeah.
Cornish hens is like an hour and a half, and you're done.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great call.
Like, Cornish hens, twice-baked potato, getting some, like, roasted green beans.
Yeah.
I'm very excited.
Oh, that's good. So would you say, what's your favorite dish? Not that you're preparing, but just in general, what's your favorite dish?
My favorite is actually green bean casserole. We're not making it because it's terrible for you.
Right.
My favorite is actually, I will eat green bean casserole pretty much any day of the week. Whenever I see it, if you're out at one of those, if my wife's at a potluck and I go with her, or a company meal, or wherever, if I see green bean casserole, I'm, like, boxing out people like Andre Drummond. Just, I'm going to have this entire plate. You guys can get your own.
Where are you on stuffing?
I'm a big traditional stovetop fan.
Okay. Just, I don't like it at all in any form.
I'm not surprised at that.
I don't know what it is.
Hey, what's with the soup hate?
I don't hate soup. It's just not a meal.
How is it not a meal?
How much soup do you have to get full?
Like, a good soup? A really good soup? You could do that in a bowl and a half.
I'm a fan of soup when it's cold. I'm a fan of soup when I'm sick. But, like, if we're talking, like, it's April 25th and it's 70 degrees out, you offered me a bowl of soup for dinner, I'd slap you in the face.
I mean, I think it depends on, I think we have to like, we have to really get into the kind of the heart of what we're talking about here. Cause if you're just saying, look, tomato soup, I agree with you. Tomato soup is not a meal. I hate people that tell me tomato soup is not a meal. That's a lie.
Like,
okay.
I like, all right, well, it's different, but stew, I'll eat stew. Like stew is a meal.
Right.
And
chili's a meal.
Chili's obviously a meal. Like a bisque, a really, like a nice lobster bisque. That's a meal for me.
See, you realize what you're saying here. The key is you got to have a protein in it. That's the thing. You got to have a protein in it.
Yeah, but I don't like. Here we go. A minestrone, a French onion, a chicken noodle. That's not a meal to me. Can't do it.
Chicken noodle soup's not a meal.
I can't do it. It's not enough. You got to eat a lot of bread, and bread will kill you.
See, all my soups are like heavy on like multiple ingredients, but I will just say like my favorite right now is and this, everyone like thinks this sounds disgusting, but it's kale and white bean, and I just load it up with pepper, and it's just great broth and pepper with a protein. It's awesome. It's fantastic.
That's a blender away from being a hummus.
My meal habits have also changed dramatically since I've just like cut out, I've cut the amount of food I eat by basically 75%.
That's the key. Yeah.
Like 5 months. That's the thing is, I probably would agree if I still ate as much as I used to. I would have like a bowl because I did. Like I used to have a bowl of soup and then later be like, oh, I had a sandwich and then some other stuff. It's like, all right, so you basically just had soup as an appetizer.
What was funny enough is when that conversation was happening last night, I had just eaten nachos for dinner. So there you go.
All right. You're in Utah now.
In Utah.
I think people should know. So, hey, enjoy Utah and enjoy Sacramento and happy Thanksgiving to all the listeners. Thanks for listening.
Happy Thanksgiving, guys. Yes.